And welcome to the latest edition of Upon Further Review with the Podcast Profs. As you may be wondering, where's Anthony? Anthony is in our nation's capital, which should be enough of a sign of distress to make us all concerned. Of course, we kid. We do miss our good friend, but how thankfully we have a special in-studio guest, longtime listeners of our previous iteration, simply the Podcast Profs, remember, Michaeline Kane. Welcome aboard.
Thank you for having me, Soren.
Absolutely. I am Dr. Soren Fanning. I am a professor of world history at Robert Morris, and I am, I'd say assisted, but that'd be a complete lie because he does like 90% of the work, and I just show up and talk. Our producer, our buddy, our pal, John Rowland. Thank you, sir.
Hi.
So, and that's about it. So, John, of course, is our wonderful, what is it you describe yourself? The voice in our head?
That's about right.
Okay. So today, one of the reasons I asked Michaeline to join us is over the weekend, for those of you on social media, and that I think is only about 92% of the American population, you may have noticed the trending hashtag MeToo. Now, unfortunately, now, Michaeline, you and I are, of course, old enough to remember when a hashtag was called a pound sign.
Yep.
Yeah. So give your view, because this was mainly in response to an event that has occurred over the past, 10 days, 2 weeks, something along those lines, percolating in the halls of power. So give me your opinion of the whole Me Too phenomenon.
I always find it fascinating to see what goes viral. And yeah, this is something that has gone viral. The hashtag tracks women who have been assaulted, abused, all sorts of iterations of being in uncomfortable places with men where they felt that their space was not respected. It could be in a relationship, it could be by a stranger, it could be on the street. And the purpose of that was to get a scope of the problem.
Right.
I don't know a single female who has never been uncomfortable with a stranger, with a family member, with a partner. It's just a space that we live in.
I'm glad you brought that up, because obviously I own and operate a Y chromosome, so I'm not part of that world. Now, I pride myself on trying to be a fairly woke individual. I try to keep up, but I was just whomper jawed at how many of my friends, my colleagues, my family members were in that position. And then I saw a statistic that just completely blew my mind. For men, the number one leading cause of death is heart disease, which, not shocking if you look at how much we worship at the altar of meat.
Yeah, bacon. I was going to say bacon.
Bacon in particular. Oh, bacon. Which I think may have done more to prevent the spread of both Judaism and Islam in the United States more than anything else combined. What? No bacon? We're out. So there's that. But yeah, so for men, it's heart disease. For women, it's men.
That sounds right.
Blew my mind. So, as nervous as it is for, now I'm very fortunate. I have now been married for 15 years to my best friend on earth. Thank God I found her. But I remember, and John, perhaps you remember this, especially when you're in middle school, high school, when you first start becoming interested in dating, the absolute gut-wrenching terror asking someone out the first time is.
I don't remember anything from middle school. I try to block those times out of my head.
Exactly. So we have this little mental block. Michaeline, the middle school, the same thing?
Oh, yeah. It was Lord of the Flies.
It pretty much is. That's actually the closest I think I've ever come to being unsupervised yet with adults in the room as ever. And it was just terrifying.
Yeah. That was a rough time of life.
Yeah. Of course, for me, I mean, this is in the bad old days. This is in the mid-80s. So this is back before football players got concussions. They didn't get concussions. They got their bells rung.
Yeah.
And if you were, what's that wonderful phrase, shaken up on the play?
Mm-hmm.
They pull you over to the bench, and then they'd ask you something simple like, how many fingers do I have up? They don't ask you, like, what town are you in? You might get that wrong.
Yeah.
So, how many fingers do I have up? Three. Close enough. Get out there. Mm-hmm. Plus or minus one. So yeah, the 80s. When if you don't mind the question, when were you in middle school?
I would have been in middle school right around 93.
Okay, so I was in the 80s, you were in the 90s. John, I'm assuming, was in the 2000s.
Yeah.
Okay, so three generations, and it's pretty much universally awful.
Yeah.
But, you know, asking someone out when you're like 13, 14 is one of those bowel loosening moments, you know, especially as a guy, because back, especially back in the 80s, the men were expected to do this.
Yep.
That cannot compare to the terror that must go through some people's minds accepting a date, particularly for women. You know, I can only imagine you get in the car with someone who seems nice enough. Oh, where are we going? You know, statistically, to your grave. I mean.
Well, I do not. In the time periods of my life when I've dated, I don't get in a car with anybody. I meet them where we're going. I meet them in a public, well-lit, well-populated place. And you have to be six dates in before you're allowed to know where I live. Nonetheless, pick me up and be responsible for getting me to and from where we're supposed to go.
Right.
There's a level of trust there that strangers do not get.
And I can hardly blame you, but what's interesting is, you know, dating is and getting to know someone on a romantic level is, on the one hand, exhilarating and fun. And if it wasn't, we as a species would have died out a long time ago. But by the same token, what you're describing is not fun nor exciting, but sounds a lot like a hostage negotiation.
There is a lot of fun, and there is a lot of hope and excitement and newness.
Sure.
But there are also basic ground rules. I was raised with some pretty serious ground rules that these are, you don't go out by yourself. And that went right along with, you look both ways before you cross the street. It was just ingrained in me to be a nervous female, because you don't want to find yourself in a situation that you could have prevented.
Right. And I... As an adult now,
yes.
One who is in his fifth decade of life, I can completely appreciate that. But, you know, I look back at growing up when I was in my 20s, and I completely understand why that's there. I kind of kick myself for not realizing there's this whole universe of activity I was completely oblivious to. Now, again, part of that is I grew up as a straight, white, cisgendered male. So, I mean, obviously that's going to limit the pool of my experience. And one of the reasons I'm very glad you decided to join us, and I thought it'd be good to broaden that pool for all of our listeners, because we have an audience of tens out there. but it's a good thing. I mean, growth comes when you sort of get outside that experience. So... what struck me, and maybe you can speak to this, was some of these women I'm connected with, and by the way, overall, I want to make clear, and I don't know how you feel about social media. I think in the main, social media has generally been a benefit to society rather than a hindrance. I don't know. How do you feel?
To me, it's a tool.
Right.
And a screwdriver can fix things. It can get you leverage to get something open, or it can slit somebody's carotid artery open.
And that took a dark turn real fast.
it's a tool.
Sure.
It's all in how you use it.
Right.
The wielder makes a great difference to the end result.
And you're absolutely correct. I mean, for me growing up in the bad old days, not just before caller ID, when that phone bungeed to the wall, rings, you have no idea who's on. My daughter, by the way, is blown away by the fact that I had the courage to answer that phone.
The memories.
Well, yeah, speaking of memories from those days, I've discovered something about my daughter's generation. Now, there's this lame attempt to name them Generation Z, which I think is ridiculous. It's the post-millennial generation.
Okay. We can come up with a better name than that. Let's work on that.
That would make, you know what that would make? That would make a great call-in contest. All right, I'm starting that. That's a thing now. Okay, over the next, let's say between now and Thanksgiving, think that's a fair enough time?
Sure.
All right.
That doesn't sound like a bad time.
See, this is why I love John.
Like the way John thinks.
He is our Zen. He is our center here at Upon Further Review. Okay, so as a little aside, between now and the Thanksgiving holiday, you may either call in to RMU Radio, which is the number is 412-397-6816, or you may email either myself, which is Fanning, F-A-N-N-I-N-G, at rmu.edu, or you may email Anthony Moretti. He's going to be really surprised when he starts looking into his inbox. So, Anthony, if you're listening, don't delete those.
Do you guys have a Facebook?
We do. I was getting to that, but okay. Thank you. But that's Moretti, M-O-R-E-T-T-I, at rmu.edu. Or you can go to our Facebook page, The Podcast Profs. Give us your suggestion. What should the generation after the millennials be called? Please keep it PG. This is a somewhat family-friendly radio show. Otherwise, I'm going to have to start inventing terms, which is... You know, I know you have a son, and when, you know, my daughter was little, and every now and then, being the klutz I am, I would bark a shin or whack an ankle on something, and I'd have to come up with a substitute for profanity real quick.
I used to say swear words.
Just like
actually say swear words, swear words, swear words, especially when I'd shock myself at the barn on electric fences, because I taught little kids to ride horses, so you can't really be dropping inappropriate language, so I would just say swear words.
Nice. By the way, just out of a weird curiosity, what does it feel like to actually get shocked on an electric fence?
It's, you often do it accidentally.
Right.
And so you find yourself in a moment of you're just frozen and you're not sure why, and you're not sure if you're being thoughtful.
Ah.
You're not sure what's going on, and then it hits you, and that's when your nerves are like, yeah, this hurts. And the one time it was so bad, I pulled my phone out of my pocket because I thought it had potentially fried my phone.
Now, I love the fact that your body's nervous system is on fire and your first instinct, save the phone.
No, this was after I disconnected myself. I was just I was just like, oh, man, oh, I hope I still have a cell phone.
Wow, that would be a story for the repair shop.
Yeah, you know, it wouldn't be the first time.
So on a scale from... Let's say stubbing your toe, being at the low end.
Mm-hmm. That is not at the low end.
Or what's the low end then?
Paper cut?
Paper cut?
Yeah, I'll give it
hang
to paper.
Hangnail?
I'll give it to paper cut. I think hangnail is a little worse.
Okay. All right. So paper cut at the low end, stepping barefoot on a Lego in the middle of the night at the high end. Where does the electric fence rank on that scale?
Well, I'm going to tell you, it depends on the fence, because the day that I thought that I might have fried my cell phone, I had just cleared about 3,000 feet on a cattle fence. So if you have no weeds, no nothing touching it or grounding this fence, you are getting the full wallop.
Ouchie.
That's a lot different than if you have a couple of strands of grass, something grounding the fence in a couple of places, even minutely. It can come pretty close to Lego in the middle of the night.
Ouch.
Yeah.
And by the way, just listening to your expertise, I'm just reminded that should we ever face a technological apocalypse, Michaeline will be fine. She and her clan will be happily living off the earth and surviving. I will be passing through the digestive system of a wolf. That's just how that's going to work.
It's not going to be flowers and roses.
Yeah, but it may be bees and worms.
It will be.
So, well, we'll get to that in a second. So absolutely, those of you just tuning in, you are listening to Upon Further Review with A Podcast Prof and our special guest, Michaeline Kane. I am Soren Fanning. He is John Rowland, our expert producer. So having gone down that particular cul-de-sac of conversations, I'm going to try to wrangle this back. So I was mentioning just how stunned I was that people I'd known for decades and decades. When I mean that, I mean, you know, there are some of my female friends that we met in 1989. So, you know, we're talking 28 years of friendship. No idea.
Yeah.
Absolutely no idea. So here's the question, and this is going to get a little tricky. Is it simply because this is something that typically doesn't get talked about outside, and I don't mean this dismissively, but sort of the sisterhood or is it just that I was completely oblivious?
I will speak for me personally.
Right. And yeah, I didn't mean to make you sort of the Lorax who speaks for the trees.
No, that's okay. For me personally, this was something that I expected. This was, right. You know, the sun rises every day and sets every evening. And if somebody was there to experience it with me, then we'd talk about it and maybe say, that was really rude or that was really ignorant. Or in an extreme case, you know, I was frightened. That scared me. Like I really right. felt for my physical safety in that moment. But the sun comes up again tomorrow and it's a new day and you move on with your life.
See, and again, this is once again, you know, this is the evidence of the Y chromosome cocoon I've lived in most of my life. You say that so nonchalantly and I'm sitting here just horrified. So that means it must happen often.
I worked in various service industries. I was a bartender. I was a cigarette girl. Mm. So I would go to bars in the evening and give out free packs of cigarettes.
They still have those in the 21st century?
No, that was a couple. Okay. That was a couple years ago. That was one of the most so you're one of the fun last. Jobs. I was.
Okay.
I was. And I also have waitressed all of my female friends in any of the service industries that I mentioned experienced that. It's to me, it's a sense of entitlement. I'm here buying things to tip you in the establishment in which you work. You depend on this job.
Ah.
So
it's
guess
more
what?
Of a
here I am. Mm-hmm.
So would you say it's more of that specific power situation, or do you think it's something more endemic in culture? And I'm just asking for your opinion.
Oh, it's definitely more endemic. I have experienced it as a consumer in the public at places like a movie theater where there's not necessarily alcohol involved at a restaurant, at a gas station. It just happened more often in the service industry whenever I was working.
Okay. So, and that is a absolutely horrifying account, but you know, I think it's incumbent upon people when we hear things that are surprising, our first reaction should be credulity. It should be the, wow, I didn't know that, rather than, wow, that can't possibly be.
Yep.
And I think that from my admittedly limited experience, I think that in some ways is one of the problems we face in trying to combat this.
Yeah.
Is just the well, I haven't experienced it, therefore it can't exist.
Well, I appreciate you having this uncomfortable conversation with me because these are not things that are easy to talk about, but we sure. have to be willing to talk about them. We have to be willing to have uncomfortable conversations if we want to understand each other.
Right. And now statistically, the overwhelming majority of victims of sexual harassment or sexual abuse or sexual assault are women. Now, that said, that number is not 100%.
No.
And I do want to take a moment to recognize that it isn't just women. It's overwhelmingly women, but it's not just women. There are men who do face this sort of thing. And unfortunately, just again, my two cents, my opinion is I think one of the reasons we have a hard time figuring out the actual number of that is we tend to treat sexual harassment of men as a punchline rather than an actual problem.
Most definitely.
Okay. Okay, so I'm not completely off base on this. That's good to know.
There's a power dynamic. Mm-hmm. To me, in my experiences, the most frightening harassment that I ever dealt with had to do with being overpowered.
Right.
It never ended as badly as it could have, but that's a very frightening situation. As a side note, my son, when he was 12, was literally 3 times stronger than I am. And so I think that's why it's easy to talk about this issue from a physical standpoint and sure. why females are at a disadvantage because there are biological differences
right.
between our body types. It's not so easy to see those things when you're dealing with the opposite, when you're dealing with female on male partner violence mm-hmm. or other dynamics.
No, you're absolutely correct. And I can only say on a personal level, I understand the vaguest inkling of what that must be like. I mean, I'm 5'7", and that's on a good day. My physique is clearly not going to intimidate anybody. And growing up, we talked about how there were no concussions back in the 1980s. Bullying wasn't a problem back then. That was called boys being boys.
Yeah.
My elementary and middle school days were fairly horrific. But that is only maybe the vaguest impression of an inkling of what that must feel like. So yeah. I'm not trying to say they're equivalent.
No.
By any means. And obviously what kicked this whole national sort of conversation off was the scandal involving Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein, who used his position of authority to assault, blackmail, coerce, whatever adjective you wish to use, young women who are trying to break into the entertainment industry with the promise of fame and fortune. Now, that's, you know, simply a high profile example. So my question to you, since, and again, I'm eager to learn from another perspective. Do you believe the reaction to Weinstein and what happened to him? You know, he was kicked out of the Motion Picture Academy. He was fired from his job. Do you feel that was an appropriate response to the allegations made?
Absolutely.
Or do you think it didn't go far enough?
I was going to say, I would love if some of those females would come forward and press charges against him.
Right. I can certainly imagine. Now, of course, one of the problems we run into is the problem of statute of limitations. You know, that, you know, and just, you know, for those of you listening, what that is, it simply means after a certain period of time, you can no longer press charges.
Right.
So for some case, I'm sure that's still an option. But for some, unfortunately, that window has closed. And for obvious reasons. I mean, you and I both work and to a large degree live half our lives in a university.
Yeah.
And, you know, here, at least ostensibly, we're here to, you know, discuss social issues, uncomfortable issues, you know, a conversation like we're having now.
Yeah.
That obviously is not the norm for most of society. So my question is, from your perspective, just as one American woman, what do you think should be some of the best ways we can prevent this from happening in the future?
That is a great question. I think it is necessary to raise children with the understanding that these dynamics can occur.
Sure.
That we need to step up for other people. Mm-hmm. When we see somebody on the street who's having a hard time, we need to say, is everybody okay? Look at each individual, say, do you need help?
Right.
And just have an awareness and talk to our kids about these issues. This is not a comfortable conversation to have,
right,
with your children. But teenagers in general are just as likely to be,
if not more,
in damaging or negative relationships, which can lead to abuse, which on extreme occasions lead to really bad things. So it is so important for us not to think that because they're young, these things can't happen to them or their friends, or that they won't happen to them when they grow up.
Right. And you and I are both parents, so we have had more than our share of uncomfortable conversations with our children. it's interesting, just as a side note, and I'm not equating the two at all, but I have talked ad nauseum about my amazing, fantastic, lover, completely daughter, Emily. But of course, we've discovered there isn't one conversation to have about sex. There's actually about three. There's the first one, which is the mechanical one, which is the simple, you know, tab A into slot B. This is how this functions discussion. Then you have to have the emotional conversation.
Yeah.
And that one Susan thankfully took. She said, look, you know, no offense, daughters typically don't want to have this conversation with their son, with their fathers, which I was all too happy to concede. Now, this weekend, of course, something interesting happened. My daughter came out of the closet. So we were going to have the whole, okay, the practicality, at some point you will be a sexual person, we need to discuss safety and all this. This led Susan and I to an interesting discussion. which one of us does she have this with? No, I mean, seriously, that's a real concern. It was hard enough when Susan was pregnant and we knew we were going to have a girl. This was late 2003. I wanted to be prepared because I did not trust my ability to parent at all. And I
you
wanted...
You can never be prepared for children. You just have Thank to you. Do the best that you can every day.
Yeah, there is, by the way, anyone listening, there is no manual to get you from one variable to another. You are going to be winging it the entire time.
And if you plan it all out, you'll be real disappointed when they go so far into left field you didn't know that quadrant existed.
So far left, it's almost right. Yeah. It's, yeah, I mean, you know, children are individuals and they have an awfully interesting way of deciding what they do and do not want to do.
Part of your job is to embrace them exactly as they are.
Right. But by the same point, also to protect them and to a degree, to sort of, you know, and I don't mean protect them as in wrap them in bubble wrap.
Yeah, that's bad.
But what I meant by this was to sort of give them the training wheels while they're growing up before they're adults. Sweetheart, if you're listening, I love you dearly, but you're 13. You're not an adult yet. But to give them those training wheels.
Absolutely.
So it's okay for them to make the mistakes won't be catastrophic.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the discussion is, look, at some point our children grow up. They're going to be in relationships.
Yes.
They need to know, obviously, how not to contract sexually transmitted diseases, what, you know, is acceptable, what is not, how to say no, that changing your mind is okay. But it was hard when, and I don't know if you've experienced the same anxiety when you were getting ready to be the mother of a son, but when I was getting ready to be the father of a daughter, I found something distressing. There are no books out there for that. There are very, very few.
You should write one.
Well, that's
just on your experiences.
Well, okay. And anyone who reads this mythical book, I'm going to preface this right now. This worked in one instance. It is statistically not significant.
No.
But I did have an exceptional child and I have a wonderful partner and that helped. But there are very few books out there similarly to be the parent of an LGBTQ child.
Yes.
That is a whole new field.
Yes.
So once again, we are back to learning by Braille. We are running short on time, just sort of to wrap up. If you could simultaneously reach the mind of every well-intentioned, but understandably clueless man in the United States, what would you like to tell them about this endemic? Not so much. I mean, we understand. We want to teach our children. We want to make sure this sort of toxic behavior doesn't get passed on to another generation. In terms of those of us who are already grown up, what can we do? And I don't want to stick with the sort of pithy, well, don't sexually assault people.
No.
Yeah, no kidding. But what should we look for? How can we be, I guess what I'm asking, how can we be good allies?
I would say that the easiest way to put yourself into a situation is we're all here because we have a mother. So we all have a female
right
in our life, no matter who you are. And if you're in a situation, if you see a situation on the street, I want you to pretend that that female is your mother.
Okay.
And I want you to pretend that that male is a stranger, or the other way around, as we talked about the different dynamics. What would you do if somebody treated your mother like that in front of you?
Right.
Or if you're interacting with a female, how would you feel if a stranger was saying these things to your mother? That, I think, is one of the easiest ways to put yourself in a place to see whether or not something
right
should be checked on.
Sure.
Just a little check mark. Just put a check in there.
Just a diagnostic.
Yeah.
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 Okay, sounds good. Yeah, and I think and one of the things, and then we don't have time to get into this, unfortunately, but of course we could get into the whole set of expectations that pop culture and society set up regarding male-female relationships. I mean, we could do several shows on that.
Yeah.
I mean, just people in general. For example, people who are overweight are apparently funny to laugh at, specifically, if you look at most shows.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. There are a lot of dynamics hidden in our everyday messages that we're so brainwashed, but that's another show.
Well, but I think the difference, and again, just my two cents, feel free to disagree. I don't think it's so much that there's this cabal out there with an agenda trying to manipulate us into certain views. Now, part of that is because I'm a historian. So I don't believe in, I don't think we as a species are frankly that organized. I think it's much more, we just tend to reinforce what we've already grown up with.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to give you an idea, one little disturbing thing before we go. Did you ever grow up watching cartoons?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. See, I was a huge Warner Brothers fan. Bugs Bunny and the whole lot. And if you were lucky enough to be around the late 80s, early 90s. John, I don't know if you ever watched Animaniacs, but that was...
I did. They actually used to air it a lot back when I was still like 4.
Yeah, and I... Wow, I'm old. I used to think that was screamingly funny, but if you notice...
It is still funny.
Yeah, it holds up pretty well. But what we tend to forget, almost all these characters, by the way, including Disney, Mickey Mouse and Goofy are no exception, they're wearing white gloves. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
That goes all the way back to minstrel shows and blackface.
Wow.
In the 1920s. You know, that's when all these characters were initially conceived.
Yeah.
Now... By the time they were put on film in the 1940s, a generation later, they were not deliberately trying to recall that, but it had become part of the character design. It has stuck.
Yeah.
So, and I think in some ways, culturally, in terms of society, pop culture, entertainment, there are certain views I think we have that are stuck.
Yes.
That we need to sort of, I don't know how we unstick that.
We have uncomfortable conversations.
I think that is an excellent note to end on. Michaeline, thank you so much for joining us and taking time out of your day.
Thank you.
And for those of you listening, please do contact us. We do need to rename the whatever generation comes after the millennials, because that name is entirely too clunky.
Yeah.
Next week, Anthony will return from the wilds of Washington, D.C. So we'll have the stories of his little safari into the swamp there. Thank you for joining us. I am Dr. Soren Fanning. She is Michaeline Kane. He is John Rowland. And we will see you next week on Upon Further Review with the Podcast Profs.